Want to experience Christ United like never before? Download our app today. You can watch live and previous messages, take sermon notes, get calendar updates, find giving options, and more. Just go to your app store and search Christ United.
Thanks for joining us today. For more information on our church, check out christislove.org. Or you can connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by following at ChristUnitedMB. Thanks again for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's message.
Let's do it one more time. If God's been good to you, will you give him what he deserves right now? Yes. Can't believe there are only two who stood. If God's been good, can you give him what he deserves? Yeah. That was great. I love that. Thank you. That was so cool. You may be seated. All right. So we got our Christ United aerobics class going this morning. We are in a series that is about our unconnected friends. And if you missed last week, I encourage you to go back because Steve did a phenomenal job of talking about how Jesus was reaching out to people who needed his touch. Today, we go to the next story in that series, and you're going to absolutely love it. Let's just jump right in. It says this, that in Luke 5:27, after this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at his tax booth. "Follow me," Jesus said to him. Now, here's what I want you to recognize is that Jesus is walking along and sees a guy who is totally off everybody else's list. Nobody would see him as being a candidate for even being in a relationship with God, much less being one that he would be calling in the way that Jesus called Matthew or Levi. Levi and Matthew are the same person, okay? So he called Levi. Nobody expected Levi to be called. And everybody would have viewed him as so far from God because he had sold out to the Roman Empire. He was collecting taxes for them. He was cheating his own people. He was just considered to be the worst of the worst. It was obvious that he would not be one Jesus would choose. Jesus chose him not only to follow him and to be forgiven, but he chose him to actually be one of his 12 apostles, ultimately the author of the first gospel written about Jesus. It's just amazing that he did that. Now, if you have fill in the blank and you want to fill it in, it says often people at the bottom of our list are at the top of God's list. Often people at the bottom of our list are at the top of God's list. And let me give you some examples of that. There wasn't just Matthew or Levi. There was also Zacchaeus in Luke chapter 19, you read about him. He was, again, sinful tax collector. Jesus told him, "Come down, I'm going to stay at your house today." Nobody would have expected it. Top of Jesus' list. Who did Jesus choose to reveal himself to when he was first raised from the dead? The most unlikely person imaginable. It was Mary Magdalene, right? And so Mary Magdalene, being a woman who had been possessed by seven demons, obviously at the bottom of everybody else's list, when they saw Mary Magdalene, they thought, this is a person as far from God as possible. Jesus brought her so close that he revealed himself first to her after he was raised from the dead. Then also think about a guy named Saul. Saul was a man who was so far from God that everybody said we should have nothing to do with him. In fact, Ananias, who the Lord sent to Saul, was saying, "Lord, this man is doing great harm to your people in Jerusalem, and he's come here to do harm to us as well. Like, come on, you got the wrong guy." So he was not only at the bottom of Ananias's list as somebody who Jesus would want, he was off his list. Like, no, there's no way this could be the right person. And yet Saul was on the top of Jesus' list to the point that Saul wrote much of the New Testament. He was one of the great world changers that Jesus had in mind. So that is not something that just happened back in biblical days. That is something that is true today, is that people that you and I have on the bottom of our list are often very much at the top of God's list. For instance, there's a lady who comes and worships with us about probably every 3 to 6 months. She'll come and worship with us here. And she actually was in a town that I previously pastored in, and she was known as a woman that nobody, they said, you don't talk to her about Jesus and about church. She was very hostile toward the gospel. She was not a very nice person, not a very friendly person toward Christian people at all. And yet God, where many had written her off the list, God had her at the top. And some people reached out and shared with her the love of Jesus. She ended up actually surpassing most of the people I've ever known in terms of her devotion to Christ. She helped to start a new church. She started a Christian bookstore. She's just a radically devoted follower of Jesus. Now, who do you know that might be a person like that? Even in high school, I remember a kid that I had known since he was in elementary school. His name is nicknamed Jar. And Jar was just, he was the meanest, nastiest kid you've ever known. He's one that grew up beating up people on the bus. And so he's a gangbanger and a drug dealer and a scary, strong, mean as the devil guy. And everybody had him written off the list as a possibility for those who you would invite to church or bring to a relationship with Jesus. And yet God had him at the top of the list. When Jar gave his life to Jesus, he became one of the most devoted followers ever. And to this day, as far as I know, he's still out there sharing the love of Jesus. And he's such a strong dude, nobody wants to refuse it if he offers it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, but the people that we often look at and we kind of say, no way, God's saying, oh, more than way. I've got them way at the top of my list. Now, those people, I said, responded pretty powerfully. Look at how Levi responded. It says, Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. Just instantly, I'm ready, and I'm leaving everything behind, and I'm going to follow Jesus. Now, that's very much in contrast to a person you read about later in the book of Luke, who was a man who truly would have expected that Jesus wanted him to follow him. And everybody would have said should be on the top of the list. He was a rich young man who had followed the commandments of God ever since he was a little boy. So surely that would be the most responsive, the best, you know, follower of Jesus would be this guy. But when Jesus asked him to follow, he said, I want you to go sell all your possessions, give them to the poor, and come and follow me. Who knows what happened with that guy, that rich young ruler? It's in Luke chapter 18, you find out that he went away sad. He wouldn't even follow Jesus. So sometimes the people that expect the invitation, that see themselves as being the best, how many people have ever seen somebody you think, they'd make a great church member? You know what I'm saying? They're good folks, you know, and well-resourced, good people, you know, and I'm going to invite them to church. And they fully expect that you would want them to come to your church, and they have no interest in coming. They have no interest in a relationship with Jesus. And yet the person who totally would never expect that you would want them, the person who never thought that God could want them. How many people have ever heard somebody say, if I went into a church, the roof would fall in on me? Have you ever heard that? You know what I'm saying? That kind of person, the person who never expects the invitation, who would be surprised that Jesus would even want them, very often this is true. Those surprised by the invitation are often the most responsive to the invitation. And so the way that he responded, you see the same thing in Zacchaeus. Whenever the Lord had called Zacchaeus, so Zacchaeus came down at once and welcomed Jesus gladly. This was that other tax collector who was up in the tree watching Jesus. And all the people saw this, began to mutter, he's gone to be a guest of a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood up and said, Lord, here I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount. We call that a Zacchaeus repentance because it is such a genuine, all in, full on. I'm following Jesus. I'm righting all the wrongs that I can right, and I'm going to go with him. That kind of response came from a guy who didn't expect that Jesus would even want him. So who have you gotten on the bottom of your list or off of your list that God may have at the top of his list, who actually may be very more responsive to Jesus than all the other people, those good folks that you think would make great Christians? And God's saying, how about if it's somebody you think that I wouldn't even want? You know what I'm saying? Or wouldn't even want me. That person very likely is one that God's calling you to think about today. Okay? So next it says this, that then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. Now, in the other Gospels, it says sinners. A lot of tax collectors and sinners were eating with Jesus and his disciples. When that was happening, here's what we noticed. Now, y'all tune into this thought. The reality is that Matthew just came to Jesus, and right behind that, he's holding a banquet for Jesus, and the house is full of people who have been far from God. Now, Mark says there were a bunch of tax collectors and sinners who followed Jesus, but Matthew, right then, Levi or Matthew, reaches out to those people who are far from God, invites them to his house, and they fill the house, a crowd of them coming close to Jesus. You will notice that people who have just come to Jesus are the ones that have lots of friends who are far from God and who are constantly inviting people in. And the reason they do is because they found the one that their soul loves, and they found the forgiveness and grace that they need, and they want everybody to know it. And so you can fill this in the blank. It's true. New Christ followers often have more, invite more, and reach more unconnected friends. Now, the truth about those who have been around Jesus for a lot of years is many times people who have been around Jesus for a lot of years don't have many unconnected friends. And those that they have, they don't reach out to very much. And they don't invite very much. And so we've been told this over the years from the time I started seminary through all kinds of seminars and courses and articles. Over the years, it's always been said that you can count on it that when somebody has known Jesus for a long time, they tend to become people who don't really reach out to people far from God. And then I even had a guy when I was in seminary came to talk to one of our classes on evangelism, and he said that people who have been Christ followers for a long time and become complacent in their Christianity, he said, they surround the church like a wet donut. And he said, and they just become this barrier to even getting out to the lost world around us. And we soak up all of our time and all of our energy on these people who are just absorbing everything into themselves and are not going out. And you can't move them beyond the walls of the church to reach lost people. Now, I believe that's not the will of God, and I don't believe that's who we are as a church. But that teaching is there because in most situations, that's a reality. Is those who have come to know Jesus don't get into relationship with people who are far from God and don't bring many people into relationship with Him. Worse yet, they are often very judgmental of those who do. And that's what happened in this case. When they saw that Jesus and His disciples were eating with tax collectors and sinners, it says this, that the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to His disciples, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" They were bothered by it, because when you and I come to Jesus to begin with, we come into a relationship. We come into a relationship with the God who created us. He puts His love into our hearts for people who are far from God. Christianity is not about a religion. It's about a relationship with God and relationships with other people. But here's what happens with us. As we read our Bibles and we learn more and more what the right thing is to do, we become experts at doing the right thing. We become experts at making sure that we do everything as it should be. We become experts at making sure that our witness is good and people see us as doing good. We want our light to shine, and so we become experts at doing good, and we become very religious in the process, and we become very judgmental of those that we think aren't getting it exactly right. And so that's what happens when people become religious instead of being in a relationship with Jesus. And so you can fill this in the blank, but religious folks are often, they care more about their own reputation than they do other salvation. And if you've gotten to a place where you realize, wow, I'm actually more concerned about my reputation than I am about the salvation of people around me, then I might be in that dangerous place of just being a religious person, you know? And I could actually be hindering the process of reaching out to those who need Jesus the most. Now, the whole idea of staying away from sinful people and why would you eat with tax collectors and sinners, that's not just something, though, that religious Pharisees feel. Even dedicated followers of Christ who love Jesus begin to feel like, well, wait a minute, aren't I supposed to stay away from sinful people? In fact, I'm working right now with a young lady who's just recommitted her life to Christ, and one of the first things we'll tell people is you need to be in a new circle of friends. You need to be with people who are going to help you grow and make you strong. You don't need to be drugged back into something that's wrong. In the book of 2 Corinthians, we're told that we shouldn't be yoked together with unbelievers and that we should come out from them and be separate. And so if that's what's being said, you can see why some Christian folks would go like, well, why would you be eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners if we're told we're supposed to be separate and we're supposed to be with people who love Jesus and grow strong? Does anybody ever get that confusion? Like, wait a minute, what's supposed to happen here? Well, with that feeling of that's what we ought to do, I have a friend, he's a mentor of mine, that talked about a point in his life where God started prompting him, he felt in his heart, to stop by this little place that was near where he, between where he lived and a church that he pastored. It was called JR's. If you've ever been on 378 toward Columbia, JR's is a bar that sat off the side of the road. It's kind of run down now, but I think the sign is still there for JR's, and it's not too far off of the road. And he said, I felt led to go to JR's bar. And he said, whenever I started feeling this prompting, like go to JR's bar and sit down, he said, I was resistant to it. He said, in fact, I kind of argued with God saying, I've never been in a place like that since I've become a Christ follower, and I don't want to go now. And he said, that didn't do any good at talking God out of it. He said, I kept feeling the nudging like I ought to go to JR's bar. He said, and then my argument was, but God, I lead a church with young people in it. And if they see me in that bar, then they're going to, you know, I potentially embolden them to do something wrong. And so it'll mess up my witness. And so I don't need to be going to that bar. And he said, that didn't convince God either. He said, I kept being nudged out to do it. And so whenever it comes to asking that question, why do you eat with tax collectors and sinners? It's really a question worth asking, is why do you do that if we're supposed to be separate? For the Jews who lived in that day, the temple worship was a place that separated the people of God from other people. You know what I'm saying? Folks weren't able to go into the inner courts unless they were pure and good people. And even the synagogues, places where they gathered, were places that insulated them from the world around them. And so it was like a safe house for saints. So here Jesus is, and he's supposed to be gathering a group of people that ultimately would become his church, right? He's beginning his church, and he's gathering these believers, these disciples, to follow him. And instead of him creating a safe house, he's taking them into the houses of sinners and surrounding them with sinful people. And so you can see why the Pharisees were saying, why does Jesus eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? It doesn't make sense. You're supposed to be in this safe house where you're kept away from those things that would tempt you and take you away from God, right? So Jesus responds, and his response was so powerful and so beautiful because what he did was totally shift their whole way of thinking. They thought that a gathering of the people of God should be a safe house for saints, but Jesus turned it around when he said this. He said, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. You are looking at these people as infectious, sinful people you got to stay away from because they might infect you. He's saying, you got to realize that what I'm here to do is bring healing to those who are infected with sin. And I'm the physician, and these guys are my assistants. They're my orderlies and the RNs and the CSNs. You know, these are the folks. We're here to bring healing to people who need to be healed of the disease of sin. They need their lives changed. They need forgiveness. And it's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick. I didn't come to call, he said, the righteous, but sinners to repentance. I've called people far from God to a place where they can be forgiven and healed. That makes sense? So he shifted everything in that moment. So from the moment that Levi gave his life to Jesus, the moment he said, I'm going to follow you, he was on a mission. The church is a gathering of people for a purpose, and that purpose is to reach out to people far from God, to bring them into a place where they can find the forgiveness of their sins, find their lives changed and healed. And your job from the moment you say yes to him is to be a part of bringing people into the same one who saved you. The same doctor who had the healing of your sin, you bring in others because you want them to have that same healing. And we're a part of a mission. And so going out on a mission is far different than what the Bible talks about when it says don't be yoked together with unbelievers. There's a great difference between working in an AIDS clinic, loving and caring for and serving and bringing healing to people with AIDS, and going out and sharing needles or having sexual relationships with people who have AIDS. It's two different things. He's saying don't be yoked together with unbelievers. Don't be sharing needles and doing the things that are wrong and engaging in and going into the life that others far from God would be in. But of course, if we're going to be healing them and bringing them to the one who can heal them, then of course you've got to be around them. You need to be. You need to be in relationship. This is a hospital. And so if you fill this in, the church was intended to be a hospital for sinners and not a safe house for saints. The church was intended to be a place that people who are far from God would be able to come in and find His grace and find His power to change. It was not intended to be something that just insulates us from the outside world. Well, if you get that mindset, watch the difference. If you're a person who's just being yoked together with unbelievers, then what you're doing is you're leaving Jesus so that you can go be with them because you want to belong to them. You want to fit in and you want to be a part of, and so you leave Jesus behind and you go and you join with them and doing whatever they're doing because you want to belong. But if you see the church as it really is, which is a hospital for sinners, when you go to those people far from God, you're not leaving Jesus to go to them, you're following Jesus to get to them. You're following Jesus to get to them, not so that you can belong to them, but so that they can belong to Him. It's like I'm going with a purpose, and I'm going with a mission, and I'm going with a desire for those people to come to know Him. Make sense to everybody? And so it's a totally different thing than being yoked together with unbelievers. It's intentionally loving and reaching out to people far from God. And so if those people are infected with a disease that could take their life and that disease is sin, I'm going to love them and I'm going to serve them and I'm going to care for them and I'm going to try to introduce them to the Jesus who could love them. If they never change, I'm still going to love them. If they get terminal and they die in their sin, I'm still going to love them. But I'm going to have the desire that I bring them into a relationship with Jesus. And so watch the difference in the thinking. If the church is a safe house for saints, then you're surprised that Jesus would have sinful people there. Well, why would you have sinners in your home? Why would you be going to the home of people far from God if you're supposed to be among a people that are keeping safe and insulated from the world? It wouldn't make any sense to be around sinful people. But if the church is a hospital for sinners, it wouldn't make any sense for there not to be sinful people there. Imagine a hospital where everybody, you got your scrubs on and you got everything done and everything's sterile and everything's clean and you got all the medicines and you got the great physician and the surgeon is there, but we won't let any sick people in here because we don't want them to infect us. Right? Wouldn't make any sense, would it? And so God's saying, here's the truth, is that knowing what the church was intended to be, it would be a surprise for there not to be sinful people around us. Because we have all been there, right? I just want you to get this. We aren't all saying, hey, we're good, righteous people, and we're willing to be around those sinners. Every one of us was terminally ill with sin. Every one of us was guilty before God, deserving of death. Every single one of us was sinful, broken, sick, and needed one who could heal us of our sin and forgive us and set us free. And we found that in Jesus. And finding that in Jesus, now Jesus says to you and to me, He says, now you're not going to other people saying, you sinners come to Jesus. You're saying, I want to introduce you to the doctor that healed me. My back was messed up and this lady on the front row was, she saw me hurting and she said, I got a doctor who helped me so much, I want to get you to him. Right? Anybody know how it feels? I found somebody who can help you with what you got. Well, when you found Jesus, you found the one who can truly bring healing to every broken and sinful person in the world and bring them into the relationship that will change their forever, and that's what you're going to do. All right, so with that thought in mind, I want you to imagine this. I want you to imagine what it was like for Jesus when He's going to Zacchaeus' house. And all the people are criticizing Him for pursuing, actually inviting Himself to go to stay in Zacchaeus' house. I'm going to stay at your house today. Imagine what His disciples learned in that moment. Jesus wasn't just waiting for the sinful people to come to Him. He was actually going out and looking for them. In fact, He said to them, the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. I'm going out to reach those people who are far from God. I want you to understand something. We as Christians get insulated in our little Christian communities. And we have our life groups and we have our friends and we have our church groups and we have all those folks that we insulate ourselves with. And we end up not having really many or sometimes any friends who are far from God. And Jesus actually led his disciples and said, I want to reach out to people far from me. I want to reach out and go out to them, to seek them, to actually seek to love them and care for them. You and I are called to do that. That's why God said to Pharaoh, he said, Pharaoh, go to JR's and sit down at that bar. And Pharaoh argued with God until he couldn't argue anymore. And he said, I finally went and sat down at the bar. And he said, and when I sat down at JR's bar, he said, the first thing that happened was the guys in there were kind of suspicious of me. Then they started joking with me. Pharaoh's a little guy. And Pharaoh said, they started calling me Jim Baker. Do y'all remember Jim Baker back in the day? Jim Baker, a guy that got in financial trouble and everything else. So he said they called me Jim Baker for a while. And he said, and then after a while, they stopped that and they started calling me Jimmy Swagger after Jimmy Swagger got messed up. And he said, they were just constantly ragging on me. And he said, and the whole time I would be drinking my Pepsi and they'd be drinking their beers. And he said, and I kept going until we started establishing a relationship. He said, one of those guys who was far from God and hadn't been in church for most of his life, he said, I remember him coming to church and God changing things in his life. It was beautiful. He said, one day, he said, I was in that bar. He said, I just felt prompted to go there in the middle of the day. He said, and I was sitting there drinking my Pepsi, and in came this guy that his name's Ronnie. And he said, Ronnie came in, and he said, how did I know you were going to be here today? And Pharaoh said, I don't know how you knew I was going to be here today. He said, you know, it must be the Lord, you know, that brought us here. And Ronnie said, well, I really want to talk to you. And he said, he invited me outside and said, I need to talk. And Ronnie told him, he said, I went to the doctor either today or yesterday, he said, because I thought I had a pulled muscle. And he said, what I discovered is I had stage 4 cancer. And he said, and I don't know what to do. And Pharaoh said that standing right there in that little piece of property between that building and 378, he said, we stood there and this man prayed to ask Jesus into his heart and his life. And he said it wasn't long after that before this man went to be with Jesus. He said, but he had two little girls who had been coming to church, and that 12 and 13-year-old girl who had been coming to church and praying for their daddy, like we encouraged you to pray for your lost friends, those little girls had prayed for their daddy, and their daddy came to know Jesus before he left this earth by that disease. And Pharaoh said, I had no idea how much it meant to them until about a decade later. He said, I was in a restaurant eating. When I got ready to leave, my bill was already paid, and I asked how it got paid, and the hostess said that there was a waitress there who had already gone home, who was a girl who at 12 years old prayed for her daddy to be saved, and you're the one that led him, right? You're the one that led him to Jesus, and she just wanted you to know. And so, guys, Pharaoh started crying at that moment, and he said, and I'm looking at an 84-year-old man, and he's got tears running down his cheeks, and he said, you know, people who are far from God, he said, very often they want us to come more than we want to go. And then he said, and very often God wants us to go more than we want to go. And Pharaoh said, we need to listen to Jesus. We need to follow Jesus where he's sending us to reach out to the people who are far from him. Make sense? I remember a young man, couple of young men that I was leading in a youth ministry years ago, and kids used to get together in Horry County and go out in what they call the cul-de-sacs, you know, at the ends of the roads. There'd be these old cul-de-sacs where they hadn't yet built out any homes, you know, and they would go out into these uninhabited communities, go to the cul-de-sac, and they'd have a big party. They'd open up their trunks, and everybody would have alcohol, and they'd get schnockered. Even the kids who were going on Christian retreats would go the night before and get schnockered. It was crazy the way they were living. So this young man said, we felt led to go to those places. We didn't leave Jesus to go to the cul-de-sac. We followed Jesus to the cul-de-sac. And we didn't go there because we wanted to belong to them. We didn't want them to accept us and think we were the greatest thing. We went there because we wanted them to belong to Jesus. And he said, we would go by Bojangles and get gallons of sweet tea. And he said, and all the guys who were starting to drink, we'd offer them a cup of sweet tea instead, and we would love on them and have a relationship with them. And they made a big difference in that time. It was so beautiful, but they were following Jesus. into places where people were far from God and needed him, right? And introducing them to the same physician that had saved them from their own sin. Now, this same young man, though, when he went to college, he got out of fellowship with other believers, and he got off mission. Sometimes you can lose your mission, and you can realize, you can begin to think that life is just about me having fun or me doing whatever. And he got off his mission, and he got out of fellowship, and he said in college, he started looking at those same parties as a place that he wanted to go, but he left Jesus behind to go to those parties. And what he really wanted at those parties was to belong to them. He wanted them to accept him. And he said, when I went into those very same atmosphere for a different reason, leaving Jesus to go instead of following Jesus into him, he said, it wrecked me. It led me to a huge period of my life in which I was addicted and struggling, and it about destroyed me. And now he's come back to a relationship with Jesus, and here's what he does. He's in relationship with brothers and sisters in Christ and with the Lord who gave him life, and he's a part of an extremely important task, and that is to get others to the same one who saved him, to get others to that same love and that same power, to the one who healed him. He wants him to heal them. And so he follows Jesus now into those places. And he follows Jesus into those places surrounded by other brothers who love and care, and he's watching God do powerful things. How many people here realize that God's called you to go into relationships? Somebody here, and I hope a lot of somebody's here, need to have a Matthew or Levi party at your house now. You just need to invite some neighbors that are far from God. I remember a friend of mine, he was saying, you know, I've got these neighbors and they get together in this one guy's garage and they're always drinking and they just hang out there all night, you know, night after night. He said, and I'm wondering, I should stay away from there, right? And I said, well, are you afraid you're going to get drunk? He said, no, I don't drink. I said, I think you ought to be there, man. I think you ought to be there. It's a great opportunity. You ought to be there loving those people. You ought to be there in relationship with those people. The truth is that you and I need to be reaching out and developing relationships like Jesus and his disciples did, because this is supposed to be a hospital for sinners. It's not supposed to be a safe house for saints. And we're supposed to be reaching those people in that way. And I want to tell you that you've probably got some people you have written off your list that desperately want to be invited. You remember how Farrell was saying it? He said, I think they want us to come more than we want to go. I think they want us to come more than we want to go. Who knows who Bobby Shuler is? You ever heard of Bobby Shuler? Bobby Shuler is Robert Shuler's son. He's now at Crystal Cathedral. He's now the pastor there. Bobby talked about this man, young man he had grown up with. He said, we were best of friends when we were growing up. He said, then in high school, my friend got into drugs and other stuff, and he went off far from God. He said, and of course, I went on a path toward ultimately into the ministry. He said, we were separated for a lot of years, he said, and we would still stay in touch some, he said, but I always felt there was a distance between us. Even when we moved back closer or had opportunities to be near each other, he said, I felt like my friend was resistant, like he really didn't want to be around me. He said, so I kind of let him do his thing, and I did my thing. And he said, and then I got a call from his sister one day that said that my friend had overdosed the night before and had died. And he said, so I went to the funeral, and he said, I was sitting on the front row of that funeral. And he said, and with the family, they invited me to be with the family. We were that close. And he said, and we're watching you know how they do the pictures of the family, of the person who has died. And he said, I was in so many of those pictures because we had been such dear friends growing up. And he said, and I just cried. He said, it just broke my heart. He said, but what broke my heart more was when his mother told me after the funeral was over, she said, you know, Bobby, he kept saying, I want so much to be back with Bobby, and I'm going to get my life straight. And once I get my life straight, he said, then we're going to be, we're going to be best friends again. And Bobby was saying, I was thinking that he didn't want anything to do with me and my life, and he was thinking the whole time, I just feel like I got to get my life straight, and then I can be your friend. How many people realize that you don't get better before you go to the hospital? You get to the hospital and you get better by being in the hospital. And God's saying to you and to me, He's saying, you and I are surrounded by a lot of sick people, spiritually sick people, who need desperately to get to the hospital, need to get to Jesus, and need to find His grace and His love, His forgiveness, His healing of that sin, and need His power to change in their lives. And guess who's supposed to go get them? You and me. So if you're ever tempted to leave Jesus behind to go to sinful people because you want to belong to them, you're in sin. That's being yoked together with unbelievers in a way that you don't want. But if you will follow Jesus into relationships where you can reach out to those who desperately need Him, and you can bring them to the same one who saved you, you can be a part of seeing somebody forever changed, their lives forever touched. And that is the mission you should be on from the moment you're saved until you go to be with Jesus.
Thanks for listening to this podcast by Christ United. If you'd like to respond to today's message, or if you want to share how God is using this ministry in your life, please send us an email to media@christislove.org. Or you can connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by following @ChristUnitedMB. Thanks again for joining us, and may God bless you.